honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and the moving life story we've been listening to today from 99-year-old Betty Rosevere of San Diego, California. She was only 22 when she received the news that her bomber pilot husband, Billy Lou Huffman, had been killed in action. The B-17 he had been piloting shot down by German fighters. He stayed with the plane long enough for every member of his crew to bail out, sacrificing his own life in the process. Two men were able to survive because of his courage, but a young widow was left trying to envision a new future. I wonder how many of us would have made the same choice she made to join the Army Nurse Corps and go overseas to the Philippines. We're going to come back around to some of those experiences with Betty in a bit, but after Japan surrendered and you returned home from the Pacific, tell me where it was you ended up and why that would prove so important for the rest of your life.
We came back, and then I was at the Presidio in San Francisco, and that's where my second husband had his master's degree then, and he did a lot of work in psychology. Mm-hmm. And so he was on the same area where I was, where people, again, I had people that had problems getting back into, you know, trying to live a normal life when things had been so terrible for some of them.
These are veterans who are trying to assimilate to civilian life.
This was, at the Presidio, San Francisco. That's where I met him. And so for about a year or two, we used to go out with different people. And so then we kind of had a group, and I was with him and this group. He was a really, really nice man. I was so lucky, really great. He's the father of my children. Bill Rosevere from England. He served in the American Army. He always thought he'd be going back to England, but he never did. He always got some job like I did, where you take care of people. Yeah. And he got his own. We had a good life. He got his PhD, and I have wonderful children. Great. I'm lucky.
You know, I've had so many Marines over the years say, once a Marine, always a Marine. Listening to you, I kind of get this idea, once a nurse, always a nurse.
I think so, yeah.
You're still doing it.
Well, yes. My husband, after he got his doctorate, he got some kind of a thing with University of Southern California. So they asked him to go to different countries. So I didn't realize that at first. So the first country we went to live in was Pakistan.
Wow.
Yeah. And then we went to live in Brazil. Then we moved, we lived in India, and then the last country we lived in was Germany. So this took a period of time. It was about 2 years or more for each country, and then we'd move in between, and then finally we came back here to this house. So during that time, we saw a lot of different countries and different people. I did volunteer nursing in Pakistan.
Wow.
And I did volunteer nursing in India.
Well, hearing about that, hearing the richness of the life that you lived, the places you got to see, you know, this big adventure that was out there that you couldn't have known when you were a war widow signing up to go be a nurse in the Philippines. What was it at that time, such a time of crisis and tragedy and loss, what was it that gave you hope that there was something still to live for that led to this incredible life the last 75 years?
I don't think I really thought of it that way. It was just that I could always find something to do that I liked. I don't think I really worried about it very much. I always had something else I could do. I was always thought that things were always pretty good most of the time for me. You just wait until things get better. Maybe that's it. And then in the meantime, I can do something to keep busy.
The 2 years as an Army nurse, the time you spent overseas in the Philippines, what was the most challenging or eye-opening aspect of that?
Well, I think I saw so many people. Now we call it PTSD, but in those days, people didn't know what to do with it. It was really a problem, you know. So you just tried to be, you know, friendly and helpful, but it was really a terrible time. And I often wondered, where did those thousands of people that I saw, where did they go? What happened to them? That's the worst part.
Not knowing what the rest of their lives looked like.
Yeah. One of the things I always thought about that time was that people were so kind to me. Because every place you go, you have papers that tell you're a widow. And I can't tell you how nice and great people were to me, you know, helpful and everything.
They had compassion.
Yeah.
Which clearly you have.
Well, it seems to me that was a better time than we have now, you know, with the pandemic and a lot of things in the government, and you feel think it's you know, it's just not right to treat people badly. And, you know, we were just overwhelming sometimes about what were they going to do. And then you'd think, well, you do this and you do this and things will be all right. You know, we'll work through it somehow. But now it seems like people are really, with the pandemic as well, it's an awful, awful time.
I think I hear you saying that there was a different spirit in America then compared to now.
So. I think so. I really do. Yeah. Or was it, I don't know, part of my life? People were so good to me, you know. But it was not just that. We had so many things we wanted to do for other people. Well, and that's why I take care of Vic.
Mm-hmm. So you would have been in the Philippines when the war in Europe ended, when Germany surrendered to the Allies.
Yes, yes.
Was there any significance to that for you, given what your husband had done and sacrificed for? And you sacrificed your husband, if we want to look at it that way.
Well, I don't think you look at it that way. It's just, even though my children never knew my husband, my first husband, they were like my second husband, who was very kind and gentle. And so they said to me, they want to know about him. My daughters, two daughters did. They want to know where he was buried. And I said, well, his father brought him back, and he's in Salem. So then they wanted to go there and see where he was buried. There, you know, I mean, we all kind of go together with, it was, and I told them all about him, and then they thought they were lucky. They had a really good father, you know. He was great. And he never, you know, it's always like, it was just another life that you had to do, live a new family.
What about for you when the war in the Pacific ended? Because you're out there in the Pacific, and now Japan has surrendered. Was that a memorable occasion?
Oh, yes. Oh, people, we just couldn't believe it, you know. It was unbelievable. So then we got rid of a lot of people. Suddenly things started to move more. First of all, you had trouble because they were afraid to send ships. Sometimes the ships, you couldn't go out. They were afraid they'd lose more ships or more planes or whatever.
That submarines or kamikazes would get them?
Yeah. So then everything opened up and things moved along. I flew home. I couldn't even find my two nurse friends. But then when we got home, we got together again. But then I went overseas, after that. When I remarried, I was gone. We never lost track of each other, though, because they were the ones that went through a lot with me.
Sounds like a big part of your life, that friendship.
Yeah.
I don't want to keep you forever. I just have a couple more questions, and if I leave anything out, feel free to fill it in. You got to go to Washington, D.C. with Honor Flight San Diego.
Right.
Visit the World War II Memorial.
Yeah.
Where there's all those gold stars representing 406,000 Americans.
No, I didn't like that. Well, first we went to the Vietnam one.
Mm.
And there are people touching the names and walking along and in groups and hugging each other and crying. I thought the one with the stars was, I don't know. We didn't even know what it was at first. And then somebody came along, and I said, well, what's this for? And they told us. It was sort of a disappointment to see just, for what, 400 people in a star?
100 people for every star, and there's 4,000 stars.
Yeah.
So I think what I hear you saying is that the names at the Vietnam Veterans Memorial Wall made that a more powerful experience.
Oh. You should see people standing. Did you go there?
Oh, sure, yeah.
You remember when we were there? The people all lined up all along, touching the names and things. At that time, see, there were still a lot of vets when we went.
You wished you could have seen your late husband's name somewhere at the World War II Memorial. Instead, it's because the number was so much greater than Vietnam, eight times as many people died,
that's right,
that they don't have all the names.
No.
Did that experience, going there, taking your daughter there, did that give you some perspective on why what you did, what your late husband, what so many others did, was so important?
Yes. Yeah, because I was a part of it, too. Mm-hmm. You know, so it was a great thing, I thought, to have that. The Korean one was rather interesting, different, too.
That's haunting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did they take you to the Women's Memorial at Arlington?
Oh, yes, yes. See, my name is there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Is there anything else about the war years that I didn't ask you about that you think is important and maybe is important for us to think about, reflect on, or remember all these years later?
Well, some of the worst things I saw were at the Presidio. See, a lot of people were brought back that had really bad injuries. And there's where a lot of them went. Eisenhower came. I took some pictures of Eisenhower. He gave me a nice big smile. But I was too shy to go ask him if I could have a picture taken. I wanted to, but I didn't do it. But it was some of the things I saw were really bad. Yeah, really terrible.
The physical shape that some of these returning veterans were in.
Unbelievable things, yeah. But they tried. Again, I think they were really kind to me because sometimes I got people that weren't as... I've been with nurses and I had seen things that happened to some of them, but most of those, somebody else took care of them. The last one I had was a man who had... he was in bed and he looked perfectly normal. When I went out, I said, well, he looks all right. And he said, well, you'll see later on or something. We were busy talking about a little bit. We didn't really talk about patients very much. So I went back in and I said to him, can you get out of bed and I'll change your bed? And he said, oh, sure. So he got out of bed and he had a tumor on his leg about like a watermelon.
Oh, wow.
And the sad thing was that he got this when it was smaller and they told him, the only way we can stop it at that time was to take off your leg, and he wouldn't let him do it.
Oh, wow.
So then, so I took care of him for a while. Then he went home. They sent him home to his family because that was just the end for him. But I just couldn't believe it. The other one, the guy was in a sling. They couldn't put him down. He had so many little bits of metal in his body. He was really bad. Yeah, some of them were just really horrific, you know. Yeah, some of them had terrible wounds, and yeah.
Let me ask you this. Has experiencing what you've experienced, you know, the perspective that you gained as a war widow, as a nurse, has it affected the way you live your life?
I don't get terribly upset by a lot of things. You know, it's part of what I see is just what happens to people. You know, you can't change that. So, but I think if you're attacked like we were at Pearl Harbor, that's a different story then, you know. Then we have to come together and fight back. You do.
If we didn't, the world would look very different now.
Yeah, that's right. Yes. Yeah.
You don't seem like someone who takes much for granted. You seem to have a purpose in what you do.
Well, I'm about finished with...
I don't know, Betty. You don't seem to be slowing down much. Have you started to think about your 100th birthday yet?
Yes, my kids... They said, when we can all get together, Mom, maybe July.
Even though your birthday's in June.
Yeah, we don't talk about June.
Do you have any advice for us younger folks who want to be thinking about their 100th birthday someday?
Just be good, be kind, and love people. Yeah, I tell Vic, I love you, Vic, you know, and he tells me that. Because I do. I love Vic. But each time I've had really, really people I loved. You can love more than one time, you know. Sometimes it's really hard to give it up, but you do. Okay.
Thank you, Betty.
Oh, thank you, Paul, for listening to me.
Thank you for sharing. Thank you for serving our country.
Oh, you're welcome.
That is Betty Rosevear, still serving others after nearly a century on this planet. We'll look forward to wishing her a very happy 100th birthday in June. And I don't know about you, but I would say the perspective that she's shared with us over the last hour is quite a gift. Head over to hometownheroesradio.com for photos and more information about Betty's story. And thanks so much for listening today. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again of that truth that Betty's story underscored for us once again today. Freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.